Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show planned for all of you today. My guest will be Dan Marek. He's the School Programs Manager for Whole Kids Foundation, and we will tell you more about that in just a little bit when he comes on. But first, I want to talk to you about some things going on in and around the city, share my recipe with you, and talk about some issues that we're all reading about in the news. Of course, weather and climate change is right up there. We've seen, you know, all these horrible hurricanes, earthquakes. I mean, the one in Mexico this week on Tuesday was just horrendous. Hundreds more died, and, you know, these changes are just taking place all around us, and it's amazing that we have people in our government that are still denying that this is a change. But they are, and so it's really imperative that we all become aware of what's going on, and every time we have an opportunity to sign our name onto a petition to try to keep another climate denier out of the White House, it's really our job to do so. So I have lots of petitions up on my website for you to sign. Of course, one to tell Congress not to cut the EPA. The Environmental Protection Agency is here to protect us, and of course they are putting people like Scott Pruitt in charge of the EPA, who does not believe the EPA does anything any good. He's really all about business and corporations. And, you know, we're seeing also in the news how big corporations and profit is, you know, runs our food system. And, you know, that's just been, that was just brought to light. Of course, the front page of the New York Times on Tuesday, I believe it was, had a great article about how big food companies are just taking over, you know, really infiltrating third world countries and going into the smallest, poorest pockets of the world, really trying to push their products. And, you know, there's so many mixed messages, and it's so complicated because, yes, on one hand, they are employing a lot of women who are very poor, who for the first time have a weekly paycheck and are really happy, but they have, you know, sold their products to these women as if those products are so good for them. Meanwhile, obesity rates, diabetes in children, heart disease, obesity is just running rampant. And the cost of healthcare and the premature deaths that are happening as a result of our American diet being exported to all these other countries is just horrible. So, you know, none of these issues are simple. They're complicated, but the main problem really is that food has become a commodity. Food is big business, and food is our sustenance, and everyone needs it, and everyone has a right to healthy, good, clean food. And, you know, the profits made at the expense of people's health just shouldn't be allowed. Last night, I was at a launch tour of a wonderful new book called Land Justice. And there they're talking about how ownership of land has been also, you know, since the beginning of our country, has been power and has been profit and has been taken away from poor and given to the wealthy. And without land, people can't grow their food, and it's just such a confusing and complicated issue. You know, when we say follow the money, that's really what you got to do. When you just follow the money, you see where so many of the problems are, and they're so interconnected. And where we start to take this power back is really difficult to know. Yet we need to. What we do know is we need to band together the voices of the people, the voices of women, the voices of Native Americans, the voices of Latinos, the voices of African Americans, the voices of indigenous people everywhere need to come together to fight white supremacy, racism, sexism, capitalism. We really need to come together and let our voices be heard, because that's the only thing that's going to make a difference here. So pay attention, please. You know, go onto my website, sign some of these petitions that I have. If you don't get my weekly newsletter, you can sign up for it on ieatgreen.com. You know, we need to protect our bees, the pollinators. My guest today will be talking a little bit about that, what they're doing to help protect pollinators, and to educate children is really a wonderful thing. So we all really need to come together around all these very, very important issues and fight the big corporations that really don't care about the well-being of people. They only care about their wealthy shareholders, and that's got to change. So lots of great things are going on. Tonight, there's an event called Trash Talking. It's at the Essex Street Market, and it's co-presented by the New York State Compost Project and the Lower East Side Ecology Center. And they're talking about food waste. And as you know, New York City has started composting. They're also going to be talking about how we can use old stale bread to make beer. And so there will be some samples there of beer that was made from surplus bread. So if you are around in the city, come on down tonight at the Essex Street Market. Also, this weekend, lots of things going on. The Honey Festival is happening at the Boardwalk in Rockaway Beach. This is the 7th annual Honey Fest, and it is bringing people together around bees, the beaches, beers, lots of tasting bites. There's a marketplace for beekeepers selling their goods and wares. There's a honey tasting contest, lots of arts and crafts for kids. Oh, it's a whole family event. There's even a costume contest. So check out the Honey Fest, the Beekeeper's Annual Boardwalk Celebration. That is all day on Saturday. And also on Saturday, there's the Into to Aquaponics at Oco Farms. I've been talking about that for a while. Oco Farms is a great local farm in Brooklyn, doing just wonderful educational work, teaching people about aquaponics and growing their food. So that's open for both children and adults, and no knowledge of aquaponics is required. So come on down to that. Also this weekend, there's a Global Citizen Outdoor Concert. This is a free event in Central Park on the Great Lawn. So, you know, there's going to be all kinds of artists there. I don't know the names of the different events. It is a ticketed event, but it is free. So go on to the website, Global Citizen Outdoor Concert. Google that, and you'll be able to get yourself a ticket. September 24th is the Hip Hop People's Climate Concert, also a fun concert event that is free. This is going to be at the New School, and it's people's climate music, trying to strengthen the climate movement through culture, music, organizing. You know, it should be really also a great event. September 24th, Slow Food East End is having their annual meeting and community potluck. That's out at the Quinnipet Camp and Retreat Center on Shelter Island. So check that out. On October 5th and 6th is the 6th annual Georgia Farm to School Summit. And Betty Wiggins is the keynote speaker. And there's going to be lots of different seminars and talks, you know, around school gardens, educational farms. There's over 21 educational sessions to choose from, a full track on curriculum, one on school gardens, one cooking with kids, lots of stuff going on. It's at the Helms College in Augusta, Georgia, if you are down that way. Also, on Sunday, October 8th, is the Long Island Bee Conference that takes place out here on Long Island at Farmingdale College. It's all day, starting at 8:30 a.m. for registration and breakfast. Coffee, lunches included, seminars, $65, but well worth it. It's really a wonderful educational day. So if you're a beekeeper or want to learn more about bees, definitely that's the place you want to be. October 12th is the New York City Wine and Food Festival. All proceeds go to No Kid Hungry and the Food Bank of New York City. And that's taking place all over New York City. So just go onto the website of the Wine and Food Festival, New York City Wine and Food Festival, to find out more about that. Hunter College always has their food policy for breakfast events every month. This month they're bringing together a panel of five sustainable food restaurant owners to talk about farm-to-table cuisine and how to let the season guide menus. And there will be a really great discussion amongst these five panelists. And you should come down to that. It's, 8:30 in the morning. It's also free, and it's a wonderful event. I've gone to many of them, and they're really well worth it. On October 14th, there's a dairy farm tour and tasting of Meacock Dairy Farm. Art Ludlow, the farmer and cheesemaker, will be doing a walking tour behind the scenes of Meacock Dairy Farm. Talk about how they take care of their dairy cows. There will be lots of wine and cheese pairings. Also what it takes to make their delicious cheeses. So it's only $20 for that. Space is limited, so do register. You can go onto the Meacock's Dairy Farm website to register for that. Edible Manhattan is having a great oyster event. It's called Outside the Shell. It's an oyster and libation pairing event, and it's an opportunity to sample briny, creamy, and sweet oysters from the east end of Long Island, also along with cocktails from local spirits. And that will be at 6:30 on October 14th at the City Pier A. And it's $79, but if you use the code OUTSIDEESCAPE, you will get a 30% discount. So, again, that's OUTSIDEESCAPE. You can go to Edible Manhattan to sign up for that. Edible Manhattan is also having an escape tasting event on October 19th, which is a fun thing to do. I've gone to this before. They have lots of vendors, local vendors, sampling foods from around the world, however prepared locally. And it's a wonderful evening to pretend you're traveling around the world. Lots of samples. You can still register for an early bird ticket for $45, or it will go up to $75 if you wait. So that might be worth doing. Also, Michael Pascal, who I've had on my show before, he's a meditation teacher and musician and filmmaker. He's having a benefit concert at Carnegie Hall on October 17th at 8 p.m. And this is a wonderful opportunity to learn about meditation and music and how these tools can help you heal and create better health. So that should be a fun event. I will be there. Hope to see some of you there as well. And then October 21st, my Slow Food chapter, Slow Food North Shore, is having a harvest fest, a farm-to-table celebration. And this is actually going to be the last Slow Food North Shore event that I will be running. Our whole board is going to be stepping down and stepping aside, making room for a new generation to take up the reins. So this will be our last event with the current board members. So please come down and join us for a farm-to-table event. We'll be having a cocktail hour with local beer and wine and hors d'oeuvres, followed by a full buffet. We have a band coming, live music, dancing, dessert, smorgasbord. So come down. It's going to be in Seacliff at the Parish Hall at St. Luke's Episcopal Church. And it should be a fun, really fun event. Slow Food North Shore is sponsoring the tickets, or subsidizing the tickets, I should say. So the cost is really reasonable. I'm not sure if they've decided on the cost yet, $10 or $20, but well worth whatever it is that you're going to be paying. So come down to that. Lots more events are on my website, but I don't want to take the time to go over them all. So please check out my website at iegreen.com and find out what other events are going on in your area. And if you have an event and you're not from the local area, or you are from the local area, either way, send them to me and I'd be happy to share them on my website. And now the recipe I want to share with you is a miso squash soup with ramen noodles. I have so much squash, so forgive me. Lots of the recipes this month will have butternut squash in them just because I have so much. But last week I came down with a cold, and as I might have mentioned last week, it's just so great when you do get sick and you have the tools to make yourself better. It's just so empowering to go, okay, I'm sick. What do I need? And I pull out my Echinacea Golden Seal, and I pull out my wellness immune support drops and my herbal teas. And of course, I make my miso soup. So this one is just a vegetable miso soup highlighting some butternut squash. And I made some brown rice quinoa ramen noodles that were just really delicious on the side, and add them to each bowl individually. So I made a big pot. I started with 14 cups of water, 2 tablespoons of wakame, which is a dried seaweed that I soaked in a cup of boiling water, and I'll add that after. 7 cloves of garlic. I really poured in the garlic and the ginger. I put in a big, fat 4-inch piece of ginger that I cut up into chunks. 1 organic onion that I chopped into slices or slivers. 1.5 cups of diced butternut squash. 2 burdock roots that I peeled and grated. Now, burdock root is something that lots of us are not familiar with, but it's an umami. It kind of adds extra depth and flavor to soups and stocks and stews. It's just wonderful. So I put that in for some extra nutritional value, too. It's also a liver cleanser and just really great for you. 2 organic carrots that I washed and chopped. 2 organic celery stalks, washed and chopped. 2 cups of chopped kale. Any greens would do here. You can use butter, you can use Swiss chard or collard greens, whatever you have growing in the garden. I also put in a cup of my green beans that I just harvested from the garden, that I cut into 1/2 inch to 3/4 inch lengths. 1/2 a pack of organic tofu. You can use firm or soft, whichever you like. I had firm sprouted tofu that I used, and I cut them into small cubes. 1/3 cup of white miso and 1/3 cup of red miso, and I like to mix them both. And then a block of ramen noodles for every 2 people. So I buy a big bag of the dried ramen quinoa noodles, and every block is good for 2 people. So depending on how many people you're cooking for, I just cook the ramen noodles on the side every time I'm making the soup. And also, once you add the miso to the soup, you want to make sure you don't let the soup boil, because then some of the medicinal value and nutritional value of the miso goes away. So just, bring it up to a nice temperature for eating, but don't let it boil once you've added the miso. So you're going to start by filling a pot with the 14 cups of water and adding the root vegetables, the onions, the carrots, and the burdock root, and bring that to a boil. Also add the ginger and the garlic and let that simmer for about 15 minutes. Meanwhile, you're going to chop all the other vegetables and get them ready and soak the wakame in the cup of water. You can cook the ramen noodles on the side according to the directions, then drain them and run them under cold water to stop the cooking process, and just set those aside till you're ready to use them. Add the remaining vegetables and the tofu to the large soup pot and let that cook for about another 10 minutes, just till everything gets soft and all incorporated. Drain the wakame and add that to the soup. And then in a separate bowl, you want to dissolve the miso. So I measured out the 1/3 cup of white miso and the 1/3 cup of red miso and put it into a bowl. And I removed 2 cups of the broth from the big soup pot. Just got the broth. I didn't want to take any of the vegetables. And I dissolved the miso in my Pyrex bowl and just mixed that up. And then I added the miso broth back into the larger pot. And then taste the soup. See if there's enough miso for you. Some people like the miso a little stronger. You can add a little bit more if you'd like. And I also, when I serve it with a little sashimi togarashi, which is a red pepper mix, a little spicy pepper. Has some sesame seeds ground in it as well. And I just sprinkle that on top of the soup. You place a portion's worth of the ramen noodles in the bottom of each bowl and ladle the soup right on top of the ramen noodles, and that's enough to heat the ramen noodles up. And that's it. It comes together really quickly. It's just, I just had this soup for days in my refrigerator, and it just made all the difference in the world in my speedy recovery. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you my guest, Dan Marek. As I said before, he's the school programs manager for the Whole Kids Foundation, which is run by Whole Foods Market Foundation. And Dan's in charge of the Healthy Teachers Program, which provides teachers and school staff with nutrition inspiration and healthy cooking techniques to help transform their own well-being, as well as serve as healthy role models for their students. And they become change agents in their own communities by taking his program. And he's trained over 15,000 teachers and food service workers with his fun interactive class that just breaks down simple nutrition into digestible information that everyone can use. And Dan, you know, prior to coming to the Whole Kids Foundation, he worked at Whole Foods Market as a healthy eating educator in Austin, Texas. He's also been a personal chef for some of Austin's elite business people and has taught classes in many culinary areas, both at the Austin Community College, at the National Epicurean, and at Cordon Bleu. And he's a regular volunteer for the Michael and Susan Dell Foundation, Marathon Kids, Health Alliance for Austin Musicians, and the Ronald McDonald House. And, of course, he's a member of Slow Food in Austin. So I'm really happy to invite Dan on. Are you with me, Dan?
I am. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Thanks so much for joining me. So, you know, I really enjoyed going on to the Whole Kids Foundation website and learning about what your program does and everything. But before we get there, can you just tell us a little bit more about yourself, your history? Did you train to be a chef? Did you always know you wanted to cook? Can you share that with us?
I wasn't trained in a culinary school at all. I started cooking when I was really young. My mom says I first started cooking when I was 3, but that's pretty young, and I don't remember that at all. My first actual cooking in a full-scale production, I was probably about 9 years old. My mom ran a catering company, and I was doing, you know, I remember flipping 1,000 mushroom turnovers and filling them and squishing them with the fork on the ends. It's probably my earliest memory of cooking. So I've really been cooking my entire life. And, you know, when I was younger, about 21 years ago, I decided to go 100% vegetarian. And that, you know, 21 years ago, finding vegetarian options in restaurants was really hard to find. So I really found that I had to start cooking myself for every single meal that I made. So became, you know, well-versed in vegetarian cooking and really getting into macrobiotics and, you know, vegan cooking styles and really, you know, kind of embracing those different styles of cooking. So that's really kind of where I kind of got my chops from, and then started working, you know, in other restaurants and then Whole Foods Market restaurants as well, to really kind of take that a bit further and, you know, mentored under some really good chefs through Whole Foods as well, too, to really kind of, you know, take that to the next level. And as you mentioned, became a healthy eating specialist at Whole Foods Market, where I basically, you know, did different supper clubs and, you know, cooking demonstrations and all kinds of things like that at our flagship location in Austin, Texas. And basically, you know, kind of took that and kept evolving it. So started getting, you know, a lot of invites to the local culinary schools and, you know, to be able to help in different organizations to be able to do those same kind of cooking techniques, showing people how it was really easy to be able to cook very healthy on a budget of time and money, you know. So that's really kind of where it came through, you know, but I don't have a culinary degree at all. I've just been kind of inducted by a couple of culinary schools saying, well, if you're teaching for us, you're inducted in our program.
Right. Did Whole Foods start in Austin, Texas?
It did, actually. We started, it's been about 34, 35 years ago, actually just down the street from where the flagship store is now, and was started out as a, like, you know, kind of a combination of really great minds in the food world. John Mackey, who is still our CEO, he's still our CEO, and basically, you know, started that right down the street from here. It's kind of a really small kind of business. And sort of the first year, it actually flooded out, which is pretty wild, and completely destroyed the inventory. But, you know, the great thing was that the community came back around and helped Whole Foods Market get back on its feet because they really enjoyed what they were seeing there. And, you know, from very early on, We really were focused on only carrying ingredients that didn't have a bunch of false stuff in it, you know. So no, you know, artificial colors, no artificial preservatives, artificial sweeteners.
Uh-huh.
That started really early and, you know, really looking at the emphasis on organic foods, you know. Depending on how old your listeners are, you know, even when I was just a little kid, you know, there was a big apple scare about organics and apples in particular. And, you know, people, there were different pesticides that were in apples that were really bad. And Whole Foods Market started searching out farms that used organic practices. You know, at the time there wasn't a certification for it. The USDA didn't actually have a certification for it. So it was really up to kind of a grassroots movement of people around the country trying to find suppliers and farmers, you know, that would actually carry what we know today is the organic food industry and being able to carry those. So they really became an advocate for that and, you know, still have a seat on the National Organics Board as well to be able to help shape and define what organics can be across the entire country. And, you know, it's been great working for Whole Foods. It's coming up on about 9 years now to really see, you know, organic become a household name. When I first started this just even 9 years ago, organic was not something that everybody knew. When you talked about organic, a lot of people just didn't know what that was. And to see it become so prolific now across every grocery store market, you can find an organic section of some sort. It's
right.
been a pretty amazing transformation happen. So, you know, it did start here in Austin, Texas, and I'm still proud to be in Austin, Texas. Just
uh-huh.
a little bit bigger of a company now.
Right, just a little. Well, you know,
yeah.
when I was talking earlier about, you know, at the beginning with my listeners about the power of the people, I mean, this is a place where you can really see how, you know, the public demand for wanting pesticide-free food has really grown the market. And, you know, it really kind of shows the power of the people. You know, when people say, you know, they want antibiotic-free poultry, well, you know, right now you couldn't have enough antibiotic-free poultry because there's not enough producers, you know, raising antibiotic-free poultry. So as,
yeah.
you know, the McDonald's and the fast food places, which, you know, I don't like no matter what, demand, you know, antibiotic-free poultry, it's changing the market. I mean, people are starting to, you know, more farmers have to transition over. And as more people request and demand organic produce and organic vegetables, more farmers are going to transition over to that. And it's a win-win because that we really need that for the health of the soil and the health of the environment. So, you know, people really have more power. Yeah, absolutely.
Seeing that. That power is, you know, it's wonderful because I think I really equate it back to knowledge. You know, it was just people didn't know that's what they were eating, you know, for years and years. There were all these different pesticides and really just overly processed foods and, you know, horrific conditions that a lot of the animal products were going through. So once, you know, it became, you know, more prevalent to be able to get the information at your fingertips, just at your, at, you know, the touch of your phone, and people really started seeing all these different practices that were really not good. They understood right away as soon as they saw that and started demanding a change. And, you know, it's been wonderful to see that process happen, especially in the younger generation. You know, like the word millennial is like kind of a big thing, but millennials actually are very conscious about what they're eating, and we see that in studies a lot. And it's great to be able to see them. Like they're seeking out organizations that are doing good in the world, and they're really seeking out better options in their food, and they're making a big change. I mean, organics is the largest growing, you know, industry at the moment, and that includes those farmers that are switching back, you know, to the organic certification, which takes a 3-year process. It's not an easy process to do, you know, to become certified organic. So it's a great thing to be able to see this change happening. And, you know, just the way our great-grandparents, you know, were raised, they were all eating 100% organic all the time. You know, they just didn't call it that. So
right,
it's great
exactly.
to be able to see America returning to the roots of our food system and really looking at nutrition at the same time.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw the article I was talking about at the beginning that was in the New York Times this week about the big food companies going into Brazil and other third world markets, you know, pushing their products. And it was just, you know, it was just such a sad article. You know, when I read it, I almost wanted to cry because, you know, because people are waking up to the ills of junk food in this country, the market's not growing in this country, and so these big food corporations have set their sights on other countries where they can, you know, attack the uneducated people and spread their wares and their products even more. And, it's just, you know, it was so disheartening to see that. And, you know, when you look at our population, I mean, I look at us as we were experiments, you know, with the GMOs and all of these pesticides. We have so many more allergies and, you know, diseases that are unexplained. And, you know, if you link it to the food, I mean, like you said, you know, our grandparents ate organic, but they didn't know they ate organic, you know. But now the food that so many people have been raised on was so poor that it's no wonder that, you know, people are being born with all these different diseases and allergies that just didn't exist before.
Really
anyway, can you share us, going back to Whole Foods, when did they start the foundation, the Whole Kids Foundation? That didn't start at the beginning,
so
did it?
So Whole Kids Foundation was started in 2011. And, you know, our mission is really to support schools and inspire families to improve children's nutrition and wellness. And we do that through a couple different ways. You know, one is to actually provide access to fruits and vegetables to kids through salad bars, you know, which is a great thing. I'll go into a little bit more detail in a minute. But the salad bar program is a great program of ours. We also show kids where their food is coming from by providing school gardens to schools. And in fact, our garden grant window is open. It's right now where the schools can apply up until Halloween, October 31st. And then we also, as you had mentioned earlier, you know, honeybees. We do honeybee grants as well, so we can actually put a grant for the school and actually have a hive on the school, so kids can learn about pollinators and how our food, most of our food actually needs those pollinators to be able to help produce our food. And then the program I run is the Healthy Teachers Program, where we go in and train on best practices of nutrition. And then we also do a healthy food service program where we go into schools that are looking to make a transformation towards scratch cooking and really help to train them on kind of making that switch over and to looking for healthier options to be able to train or to be able to serve in the schools as well. So just a little bit of background on each one of those. The salad bar program, we've actually found that kids actually eat three times the amount of vegetables if they're actually given access to a salad bar. So, you know, and that makes kind of sense. You know, like if you go into a Whole Foods or another grocery store that has a salad bar where they have the option of like one of those clamshell kind of, you know, packaged salads, you're probably going to go for the salad bar because you get the ingredients that you want exactly on there, you know. And when we're talking about kids, if there's a packaged salad and there's one ingredient on there that they don't like, they're not going to take the entire thing, right? They're just not going to eat it at all. So kids get to be able to pick their fruits and vegetables, and they eat three times the amount of fruits and vegetables if they're actually given that option, which is huge. And when we launch these at different schools, I mean, you see it. Like the kids are excited about this, and they get to try different kinds of foods, you know, they might not have ever tried before. Just because there's a little bit of peer pressure that happens, you know. It's like, well, if they're the cool kid in the classroom is eating the broccoli, well, half the rest of the class is going to eat the broccoli too, just because that cool kid is eating the broccoli. So the salad bar program is a great program. We launched that with Chef Ann Cooper, you know, Chef Ann Foundation, and Let's Move Salad Bars to School program as well. Our garden grant program is a $2,000 garden grant. So we provide those to schools. And it's basically a great way for kids to learn exactly where their food's coming from. You know, it doesn't just appear magically at the grocery store, you know. So we basically give these garden grants to schools that either don't have a garden or they have an existing garden and they have a support system built to be able to help kind of get this garden up and going. And that $2,000 can go to all kinds of different gardens, you know, if it's like if they want to do like lettuce towers, like, you know, in New York, those are really, really popular because it was harder to have the outdoor space
Right.
But in, you know, other places, it's outdoor gardens, and, you know, all kinds of different styles of these, too. And we've seen a huge variety of different ways to be able to use this. But, you know, this is a great way to be able to get kids interested in food, not only to know where it comes from, but really also try those different varieties. Because, you know, if you take a kid to a grocery store and you tell them to go pick out a pepper, they're more than likely going to come back to you with a green pepper, maybe a red pepper, you know, if they're a little, you know, out there. But the probability of them picking a purple pepper if they've never seen one before is pretty unlikely. But if they put a seed in the ground and they've been nurturing that seed for, you know, 3 months and watering it every day and just taking care of it, and all of a sudden that pepper comes out and it's purple, well, they're not going to put their nose up at it, right? They're going to try it because they put all that effort into it. So it's a great way to be able to get kids to see different kinds of foods that they've never tried before and really get to experiment with them and say, like, okay, like, I've never tried this before, I've never seen this, but I'm going to try it because, you know, this whole time my class and I have been, you know, doing different, you know, they might do classroom lessons on how much the plant is growing or, you know, anthropology, you know, on where these plants were originally grown and based out of, or, you know, what kind of populations ate these foods. So it's a really good way to be able to introduce these kids to different concepts with not only just growing the food, but trying all kinds of different things.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a couple minute break. When we come back, I actually want to talk about whether or not you get into curriculum at all with that, or you know, what kind of support services you offer to the school. So everyone listening, don't go anywhere. I'm talking with Dan Marek from Whole Kids Foundation, and you're listening to Bhavani Light Eat Green. Be right back. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest today is Dan Marek. He is the Healthy Teachers Program Coordinator for the Whole Kids Foundation. And we're talking about school gardens. Dan, you with me again?
I'm here, yeah.
Great. So when you support school gardens in the school, do you provide or is it up to the school to find curriculum on their own to enhance the program and to try to weave in science and math and all, you know, art and all those other wonderful projects that a garden can promote?
That's a great question because, you know, a lot of schools like to use their own curriculum, so we don't really want to force a curriculum on a school, but we do offer resources on our website. We actually partnered up with the American Heart Association to be able to have a curriculum with that on a school garden lesson program, our plans that we have on our website as well. So it's a great way for teachers that are just kind of getting into it to be able to use that curriculum kind of out of the box as well. We also have a resource center on our website under our garden grants, too. That you can, you know, find a lot of different information on curriculums and using different kinds of curriculums from, you know, either preparing beds to ordering seeds to developing activities, you know. So there's all kinds of different plans that we put on there. So we do have curriculums available, but it's not a requirement of the school to use those curriculums that we provide. They can use their own curriculum, the ones that they found at their places. We really want to make it so it's accessible to everybody. We don't really like saying the word no too much, right? So if a teacher, you know, has a curriculum that they like to use, we highly encourage them to be able to use those curriculums.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, from what I've seen is you really need the buy-in from the inside for these programs to be successful. And go ahead.
It's wonderful when you have those advocates, you know. A lot of schools have those, like, individual advocates that are, like, really, really pumped up about the garden. And one of the things that I always tell people is to create a team, you know. You can't have it just be that one excited teacher or, you know, it's one excited parent, you know, because especially, like, the parent, you know, after their kid graduates, like, who's going to take care of the program? So creating a team of really, you know, a rounded team to be able to help with these gardens is a wonderful way to be able to really ensure the success of these school gardens.
Uh-huh. And you said that the grant program is open right now. People can apply for the grants. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? And you can also, what is the criteria? Does it have to be a school district that has, you know, a certain percentage of free and reduced students, or can you share that with us?
Yeah, so we actually have our garden grants open both in the United States and Canada at the moment. They basically have to be a K through 12 school, a nonprofit, you know, working with a K through 12 school or nonprofit organization. So that's the American kind of thing that we do. So, you know, it doesn't matter if it's a certain percentage of free and reduced or a higher percentage. You know, we do have a system where we partner with Food Corps for this organization to be able to go through and, you know, go through certain criteria to be able to make sure that it's the best fit. That's usually to make sure, you know, that, like, the principal's bought in and that everybody knows about it, you know, just to kind of help with that. And you can actually apply up until October 31st on wholekidsfoundation.org to be able to apply for that. So, you know, there are certain eligibility requirements that you have to have on there. But it's a simple process to be able to walk through there. And if you ever get hung up on something, you can always just talk to us at grants@wholekidsfoundation.org as well to be able to answer any questions that go through. But it's a pretty, you know, simple process that we've, you know, worked a number of years on perfecting. And we just did a new grant program this year, so it's really nice to be able to have that in place so you can look up your school numbers and, you know, all the data is there to be able to make that happen. The biggest point is just to make sure that, you know, your principal's on board with you and that you have a local organization or somebody to be able to help you with that as well. Because a lot of people forget, you know, like, what are we going to do with this garden during the summer when everybody's out, you know? So
that's always the question, right?
Yeah, exactly. So having a local partner is also a great resource for those too.
Uh-huh. And is the process similar for grants for the school salad bars and for the beehives?
It's pretty similar for the beehives as well. It's the same kind of system where you have to go through, the grant process. We have a wonderful partner in the Bee Cause Project, who is really one of the leading experts in this. The Bee Grant is a monetary grant of $1,500. And, you know, it's basically a honeybee hive that you can either use an observation hive. There's a traditional kind of a hive, and then a top bar hive are the three that we typically give out. So it's a nice way to be able to do that as well. For the salad bars, that's something that we typically want the schools to be part of the free and reduced lunch program, just because we also need to train the schools on how to stock the salad bars, right? So Whole Foods and Whole Kids Foundation does not stock the salad bars. We have to train the schools on how to use the free and reduced lunch program and their commodities and everything else to be able to stock the salad bars without the price of school lunch going up, right? So school lunches are typically very, very low, like less than $1.70 typically per portion lunch. So if it goes up, you know, even 30 cents, that could be, you know, an astronomical figure for a school lunch program to go through. So we have a great partner in Chef Ann Foundation and the lunchbox.org, which anybody can access. You can go to the lunchbox.org right now and learn wonderful information about school lunches. But through that program, we actually will train the schools on how to stock the salad bars, different procedures on how to keep it clean, and all kinds of different things to be able to do through that. So to be able to do that, you just, again, go right to the wholekidsfoundation.org on that. But that one you can actually apply for all year round. It's actually, that's not a monetary. It's actually, we actually send you the whole salad bar. And it's usually, on average, it's about $2,700, $2,600, is what the price of the salad bar would be. And it's a great salad bar. We have little ones for little kids and big ones for bigger kids. And, it's a great program. And we just, try to get those out there so those kids can really have access to those fruits and vegetables.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's great. I don't know if you heard, but New York City, starting this year, is giving free lunch, breakfast and lunch, to all 1.2 million students.
I know. That's pretty amazing. That's a pretty amazing feat right there. I mean,
it really is.
New York City school district is it is the largest in the country. So that's amazing to see that kind of a thing happen. And, you know, all the people that work behind that as well, I mean, it actually leads me right into the Healthy Food Service Program, actually, if you don't mind me going into that, too, because
that's exactly where I was going, too. So please, take it away.
Yeah, so it actually started through the Healthy Teachers Program, right? So the Healthy Teachers Program was really designed to provide teachers inspiration about healthy eating and cooking techniques. We really wanted to help those teachers understand what basic nutrition was. And it's been a highly successful program around the country. Like, you know, you said we had trained 15,000 teachers across the country. And it's been highly successful in that way to be able to get teachers really to know about the best practices in nutrition. So, you know, they're actually bringing, you know, smarter options to schools. They're not, you know, on those food days, they're not bringing piles of cupcakes in and warning kids with, like, you know, different candy and stuff, where they're really understanding that, you know, food is just as much, you need to educate kids about food just as much. But the great thing about this program is it's specifically designed for the teachers. We don't have a curriculum that goes down to the kids at all. You know, it's basically just for the teachers to be able to have that knowledge for themselves. And then there's a cooking class that goes along with that based on a budget of time and money, because we know teachers don't get paid enough and they certainly don't have enough time in the day. And we show them how to cook on that budget of time and money using these same methods and same techniques, really keeping it simple and making it really time effective for them. So they can, you know, make, you know, dinner really easy when they get home in less than 10 minutes and bring healthy options with them to lunch as well. And the Healthy Food Service Program was literally born right out of that as well, because we had food service directors that were watching the Healthy Teachers Program and were like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I wish that our food service workers could do this. And that really kind of, it really sparked us at Whole Kids and got me really passionate about it, because, you know, it's one thing doing the Healthy, you know, Teachers Program is like, it's kind of like a cooking show for teachers, right? Like I go up in front of the class and do a cooking show kind of. And the Healthy Food Service Program is showing other, you know, people that work in the food industry how to do their job a little bit better, but then also educating them on best practices for nutrition. So a lot of times, basically the way this works is food service directors contact me when they decide they want to go back to scratch cooking. And they need to be able to get their food service workers basically on the same page as them to inspire them to see why it's good for them to go back to scratch cooking. Because, you know, I mean, over the years, school food has really made a lot of changes, you know, like, I mean, you know, and like in the 1950s, it was all scratch cooking in every single school. In the 1960s, we started transitioning more to, you know, commercial and processed foods because it was more cost effective and easier for the schools to be able to do. So it's crazy. A lot of schools, when I walk into their kitchens for the first time, the only knife that I can find is a box cutter. And that's amazing. You know, a lot of the schools that I work with in particular to do this training have already gone way past that point. But a lot of times these food service directors will be like, look, we're committed, you know, at the administrative office to be able to go back to scratch cooking, but we need to kind of show our food service workers why this is best for them. It's not just more time and effort for them. They're actually, you know, doing better for the kids. Because at the end of the day, everybody, it doesn't matter if it's the food service worker, the teacher, the principal, or the food service director, everybody wants the kids to be eating better. It doesn't matter. Across the board, everybody says that. So what we're trying to do is basically kind of show them what better is, right? So here's kind of a basic definition of what we call health food. And we use a three-principal method at Whole Kids Foundation, which is eat a rainbow, eat leafy greens first, and eat as close to nature as possible. Those three principles are kind of what we base everything off of, and they're easy to understand and digest, you know, so really kind of easy principles to do. So with the food service program, we give that basic nutrition, a little bit of the history of the food service program in America, and then we show them different techniques in the kitchen, like simple things like knife skills, but also how to wash and, you know, prepare vegetables, you know, in really, like, really easy ways, you know, and also show them different things like marketing of food, you know. So I'm kind of using this stuff from when I worked at Whole Foods Market to kind of show that off, you know. Like if you want the kids to eat the vegetables, don't just kind of put them in a pile, right? So make them, dress them up a little bit, make them look really nice so they're appealing. I was, you know, my mom taught me when I was really young, you eat with your eyes before you eat with your mouth, right? So doing that with school food is just as important as a five-star restaurant. You know, you might not have the time to plate every, you know, dish at a school because it's very fast paced, you know, but you can at least do something and, you know, make it look appealing to the kids so they actually have that option and they're going to take those options a lot quicker from you. So Those two programs, as you can probably tell, I'm really, really passionate about those because I help to run those as well. We have educators across the country for the Healthy Teachers Program as well. And the Healthy Food Service Program is just still in its pilot phase, but we've been getting a lot of traction. We've trained every single food service worker in Austin, Texas, Arlington, Virginia, Bellingham, Washington. I'm going out to Napa in a couple weeks as well, too. So really looking in Boulder, Colorado, too. So really looking to help out the food service workers and food service directors that are ready to make these transitions happen. So
When I took over the cafeteria at our local Waldorf school almost 20 years ago, and I wanted to bring in a salad bar, and the current food service person there was like, oh, I've tried salad bar, it doesn't work, da, da, da. And I went in and saw the salad bar that she was trying, and it was like she's putting out the same celery sticks from like days before on the same salad bar, and like, first off, who has celery sticks on a salad bar? You know, you want chopped celery. And if it's brown on the edges, no one's going to eat it, you know? And it just looked so unappealing. Of course nobody was taking it. It was a self-fulfilling prophecy. And, you know, when she left and I took over, I mean, we made a beautiful salad bar. And one of my biggest, one of the most fun things I would have is, like, taking the leftovers from the day before and, you know, making it into salad, whether it was brown rice, and then I'd turn it into a curried rice salad with raisins or a quinoa and bean salad. So you take the leftovers and transform it so it didn't look like leftovers, but it would be a new salad dish on the salad bar. And it was a way to use up your leftovers. And, you know, and I would assume, you know, when you're working with the food service personnel, you're trying to, kind of inspire them to do that kind of thing.
Right. And that's a great thing about the scratch cooking is being able to, you know, kind of change things, right? So if it's a set regimen, there's a lot of waste that happens with that. And I mean, there are definite rules that happen in the food service for schools, right? So they have to have certain measurements and certain portions of different things. But, you know, having a little bit of freedom in there is really great. And so one of the things that I've seen in a lot of different school districts is having different competitions, right? So a lot of times at the end of the school year, the individual schools don't order more of the product. So they have to kind of figure out what to do with the product that they've already got in the refrigerators, right, and kind of mixing and matching and making their own recipes. You know, and of course, meeting the standards of the USDA is part of that, you know, but it's a great lesson to be able to show them. And that's something else we do in the Healthy Food Service Program is showing people how to just read the recipes all the way through and help to inspire them. So, you know, I always tell people, don't tell your parents, but it's okay to play with your food from now on, right? So, you know, experimenting with that food, I think, is really where all of us should start. You know, just as an adult, if you were eating, you should be cooking and, you know, messing around with different recipes and going outside the lines a little bit. You know, if you're making a taco salad and it asks for cilantro and you don't like cilantro, well, mix the rules up and, you know, put something else on there instead. You know, and I think people, you know, it always amazes me how many people like watch different food shows, but then they actually cook themselves or try the recipes that are on there. And a lot of people say, well, it's like they do it so quick, I can't really remember all the ingredients. Like, when you remember the basic principle, like, just start from there and kind of go and experiment a little bit. And the best thing you can do is taste the food as you go along, you know? If it doesn't taste quite right, add a little something else into there and experiment with it a little bit. I mean, the worst-case scenario is you're going to get one bad meal one night, right? But, you know, best-case scenario is you come up with a meal that you've never had before and your entire family loves, and now everybody's going to ask you for it every single night of the week, and you're going to say, no, we can't do that again tonight, right? So experimenting with your food is something that I love to be able to encourage. We do it a lot more in the Healthy Teachers Program to be able to get those teachers experimenting with it too, because the Healthy Food Service Program, there are definite guidelines that the Free Introduced Lunch Program has to sit by, but we always encourage people to do that at home too.
Uh-huh. And when we met in Denver, you were telling me that in your program you cook without salt, oil, and there was something else too, right?
I don't use salt, and all my chef friends are like, that's crazy. Like, I can't believe you don't use salt. And the reason I don't do that is because I tell people this all the time. Every diet in America, every diet in the world is like a fingerprint. Just because I eat a certain way doesn't mean you can eat that exact same way, and everybody can eat the exact same way. That's what I have kind of a beef about, like, trendy diets, you know? Like, doesn't matter if it's paleo or if it's vegan, right, or whatever, you know? It's like everybody has different body styles, different backgrounds that they've grown up eating. Their you know, parents or their mother was eating a different way when they were, you know, being carried. Like, all these different things make up every single one of us. So all of our diets are completely different. So the reason I don't use salt in particular, and I typically go with low sodium, because I do use sodium, but I usually use it in, like, tamari, which is like it's a gluten-free soy sauce. But I don't use salt because so many people's palates are adjusted not to having salt already. So the tongue, quickest healing organ in the body, it actually only takes 7 days to completely switch your palate. So if you go without, you know, salt or go without sodium for an entire 7 days, 7 days later, your palate will be completely switched to having a very low sodium diet. So a lot of the people I cook for have low sodium palates. So I just don't use salt, and I say, I'm not offended if you put salt on this. There's a salt shaker on every single table in America. And a lot of chefs get offended by that, but most chefs put too much salt in food for people that are living a healthier lifestyle. So the other weird one that happens a lot is oil, right? So I cook with oil, but in the classes I show people how to cook without it. And it's not that oil's bad, but, you know, it doesn't matter if it's olive oil, if it's coconut oil or canola oil, or even 10W-40. Don't cook with 10W-40 out there. But all of them have 120 calories per tablespoon, doesn't matter what kind of oil it is. So if you're adding oil to your average saute pan, you're adding 400 to 600 calories to your dish before even adding any food to it. Right? So Americans just use way, way too much oil. And I'm not saying not saying it's bad for you. I'm just saying that we use way too much of it. At most, what we should do is just put it, you know, a little oil on the bottom of the pan and then wipe it out with a towel just to get the nonstick surface. So what I'd show people how to do is how to use water or, you know, vegetable stock, or if they want to use chicken or beef stock, you know, to add those flavors.
And saute
Exactly. And then if they're like, yep, but I really like the taste of olive oil, I'm like, well, great. Just sprinkle a little of the olive oil on at the end of the dish so you're not just cooking it all off.
We are just about out of time, Dan. So before we run out, I'd love you to just share your website so that everyone can go there. And I know you have great recipes on the website, too, and people can take those down.
Yeah. Well, you can always visit us at wholekidsfoundation.org. And we have a huge amount of resources on there, from all of our school programs, from garden grants to salad bars, our honeybee grants, the Healthy Teachers Program, the Healthy Food Service Program, and then all kinds of other resources, too. We also have a couple apps on the App Store, including an organic education app for tablets and a great game called Awesome Eats for kids, showing the kids how to separate out their fruits and vegetables and grains and nuts and seeds, too. So you can find all of that information on wholekidsfoundation.org.
Great. Well, Dan, thank you so much. It was so informative, and I really appreciate you taking the time and joining us today. And everybody
thanks
out
for
there.
Having me.
You're so welcome. And everyone out there, thank you so much for joining us. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green, and I've been talking with Dan Marek from Whole Foods Foundation. Whole Kids Foundation. Anyway, have a great rest of the week, everyone, and I'll see you all again next week. Bye for now.